Good morning. All right. Welcome to Living Vine. So glad you're here. I'm honored. It's really humbling to be a part of what God is doing here in and through this community. Each and every one of you, the family, the body of Christ, what he's doing, what he's done, what he will continue to do, we get to be a part of that. That is exciting. I am thankful to be a part of this family. So if you're new today, a special welcome to you. And if you'd like to know more about us and how to get connected, go to the back at the end of the service, and there'll be people that will help you. They'll just be the people that look like they know what they're doing. I'm not that person. So go back there. They'll connect you. They'll set you up. We're jumping into a series on James. So just a reminder before I forget, there's a study guide to walk you through James, and it's online. Once again, if you don't have that or you need to know how to get to it, go to the people in the back who know what they're doing, okay? And they will help set you up. But that's going to help guide you through this. So we are jumping into this study. Now, let me ask you, how many of you like to listen to a whole album of a musician? Yes, okay? I know I love playlists. I got all kinds of playlists. But I love listening to the whole album. My wife gave me a turntable. Not a record player. I learned that. I'm not really a snob. I'm just learning as I go. It's a turntable. About 10 years ago. So I've been slowly collecting albums. And the old ones are my favorite because you can pull out, first of all, there's beautiful art on them usually. It's really cool. You know, you get the idea of what the artist is going for. But then on the inside are the lyrics in the sleeve. You remember this? Anybody? The lyrics used to be there. Now, you know what? I realized my kids just taught me this. You can follow along to the lyrics to songs on your phone. Yeah. And okay. If you want to know how to do that, at the end of the service, go to the back and find somebody who knows what they're doing. But I love sitting down with that album, with the lyrics, and listening to the whole album from start to finish. What you realize is that all those one-hit wonders, which are amazing, and I love them, they're part of a full collection. They're part of a full, like the artist had a bigger vision than just that one song. And as you listen, you start seeing how all the songs connect to each other, and there's a flow from the beginning to the very end. That's very similar to what we're doing when we work through whole books of the Bible. I love taking strong verses and working through them, and we do that from time to time, and we do kind of playlist of collections at times, but right now we're going to work through James. And my hope is that as we work through James completely, that James, the letter, will work through us completely, and that we will see that God has begun a good work in us, and that he is faithful. He will complete the work he has in mind for us. And this letter is going to encourage us to be faithful in that process. Okay, so before we get to the letter, we're just going to go through the first four verses. Just four verses. It's pretty solid, okay? But before we do that, let's look at who wrote it. Now, the answer is probably obvious. The answer is James. But who is James? Well, what we see in Scripture is James is actually the brother of Jesus. We see that both in Matthew and Mark. It says James is the brother to Jesus. Now, you think, oh, that explains it, man. He's on board, right? It's part of the family business, right? Are you kidding me? Do you have a brother? Did you jump on board with them every? No, man. You know, I mean, he was at first, his whole family, they didn't know what to do with Jesus. You look in the Gospels and crowds of people are following him. They're like, oh my gosh, what can we do? How can we follow you? His family's like, I don't know what to do with this guy. We really don't know what to do with him. In Mark 3:21, it's like, they say literally, I think he may have lost his mind. That's part of his family. That's James. So suffice to say, James might be a little skeptical on the front end of this thing. He's like, I don't know what to do with this guy. I'm not sure I'm in. I'm not on board with this. So how do we get from that moment to here? Obviously, there's been a transition. He goes from being just the brother of Jesus to a believer in Jesus Christ, the Messiah. He goes from being a skeptic to being a servant. So obviously, something has taken place. Now, we can get some dots connected through Paul. Paul has a lot to say to help us understand what's taking place in James' life leading up to him writing this letter. So here's what Paul says, just a few things. In 1 Corinthians 15:7, Paul says that Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, appeared to James. Okay? Can you imagine that event? Now, my brother, now something's happened. He's seen the resurrected Jesus, and it transforms his life. We go on to Galatians 2:9, and it says that Paul refers to James as a pillar in the church alongside Peter and John. Okay, we're talking about some stalwart, we're talking about legit special forces. The real deal. He's a pillar in the church. We get to Acts 15 and we see that there's a council has come together, the Jerusalem Council, and it's a critical moment in the history of the church, really in the expansion of the gospel from Jerusalem, from the Jewish culture, out into the Gentile culture. And when a decision is required to be spoken and given from the council, who does it? James speaks the words. James says, hey, it's okay. We're going to welcome the Gentiles. The whole issue doesn't necessarily matter at this point, but what matters is it was a very important thing that he needed to say. And they chose James to be the one who speaks. That says a lot about his authority and standing with those in the Jerusalem church. So he's a pillar in the church. But beyond that, if we get past Paul, there's a couple of nicknames that historians say were consistently given to James. One is James the Just, simply because he was literally putting his faith into action. And what was going on the inside of his life, the inward transformation, was being seen by those around him. James the Just. And then the other one I love is Old Camel Knees. He was so committed to prayer that his knees were calloused to the point that it looked like camel knees. Again, so here's what I want to encourage you to do. As you read James, as you study James, as you soak James in, remember, it's coming from someone whose heart has been completely transformed by Jesus. Completely transformed by Jesus. He's putting his faith into action. So when he speaks about enduring trials, he's speaking from experience. He's put his faith to the test, and it's become a sturdy, a solid faith. We might talk about it in the terms of like integrity. The integrity of his faith. You think about the integrity of this barn. It's solid. It can hold us. It can handle it. James's faith was sturdy and solid to the point that he would give his life for it. Jewish leaders pressured him and said, if you don't denounce your faith, we're going to put you to death. And that's exactly what happens. His faith is so sturdy, he's like, I'm not going to change my mind. I'm not going to denounce Christ. My faith is sturdy enough to handle this to the point of death. So, again, James, the brother, becomes the believer. The skeptic becomes the servant, becomes the leader in the church, becomes James the Just, becomes camel knees, becomes the martyr. A great transformation has taken place. And if you were to rewind the clock on James's life, 30 years back, let's just rewind it and say, hey, James, you think you're going to be a leader in the church and maybe you'll give your life for your brother Jesus? What do you think he would say? What? Get out of here. Absolutely not. So here's my question. Do you think your current trials might be preparing you for a purpose that you can't see yet? Let me ask you again. Do you think your current trials might be preparing you for a purpose that you can't see yet? If so, James is a great letter for us. Great. And so let's get into the letter. Let's just a little bit about the letter. We'll get a little bit into it more as we get into the text. James was probably written about 10 or 15 years after Jesus was resurrected, which makes it really one of the earliest writings in the New Testament. Okay? It was written, more than likely, it was written before this Jerusalem Council, which is important. If you look at it, it kind of has a Jewish flavor, and there's a reason. Because the gospel hasn't really expanded into the Gentile world to the point where letters needed to be addressing the needs of Gentiles or the issues they're dealing with. So it's very focused in its audience. It's very concise. It's five chapters. It packs a punch, man. It's very practical. The metaphors are very clear and simple to follow along with, okay? And here's the big idea that's coming out of James, not just in these four verses, but the entire story. James is calling them to put their faith into action, to really put their faith into action. In fact, in James 2:6, it says, faith without works is dead. Faith without works is dead. You're like, I don't know about that, Jonathan. Does that sound gracious and gospel-y? Well, think about it. What in your life have you done and stepped away from? Let's just pick a hobby, pick a skill, and you step away from it for a little while. Let's say you haven't played golf in 5 years, and you go out with your buddies. Do you think you know what's going to happen, right? I always buy the cheapest bag of golf balls I can buy. So I'm going to shank them. I just know it. I'm not going to slow down the group, though. I mean, think of the hobby. Think of the skill that you've stopped using. Think of the languages you studied in high school and college, but you were never around people that spoke that language. Do you? No bueno, right? No hablo español. Bonjour. That's it. I mean, I've studied four languages. I barely know my own, okay? I mean, you just, like, you lose it. There's atrophy to it, right? I love fly fishing. Haven't cast a rod in almost 2 years. The fall is going to look pretty nasty, okay? You know where I'm going with this. I love to tie flies. I have a whole cabinet. It's got like 20 drawers of different materials for fly tying. It's been shrink-wrapped and buried under boxes in the attic for about 5 years. Oh, well, the point is, I'm just going to start buying my flies, right? What James is saying is, it doesn't matter, and hear me say this. It doesn't matter if you're new to the faith as a Christ follower, or if you say, man, I've been doing this my whole life. What James is saying is if you don't put it to practice, what you say you believe might as well be shrink-wrapped and buried under boxes in the attic. It does you no good if you can't put it to practice. Your faith is not really being put to work. Okay? So, there we are with that. James is going to call us to put our faith into action, specifically today, as it relates to our trials. How will putting our faith to action help us navigate, see, and work through our trials? Well, let's get into it, all right? Let's just read James 1:1-4. I'm going to read out of the ESV. Is it on the screen? Okay, good deal. All right, James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes in the dispersion, greetings. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect, complete, and lacking nothing. All right. Let's just break this down. We're going to go verse by verse. All right, let's start with verse 1. That would make sense, right? James, a servant of God and the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, I just gave you his reputation. I just gave you his resume. Does James start out with, I'm the brother of Jesus. You better listen up. I'm a big deal on the city on a hill. No. He's like, I am a servant. Literally, I am a bondservant. I am a slave to Jesus. Let's just simplify it. I'm a slave to Christ. That speaks volumes to his transformation. He's actually elevating and giving honor to a position that everyone in the audience that he's writing to can now have. He's like, man, I want to be like that. I want my life to represent that. I mean, imagine how simple it would be. Think about this. Think about the titles and the achievements that you might still be clinging to for identity, for validation. What would it look like to simply say, I am a servant of Christ. Think of how your social media profiles is right? Is that right? You know, all those tricky little trendy things we say. I'm a dancing husband. You know, I don't know. You see, you know what I'm talking about. Lover of kids. Fun. What if you just simplify it? Servant of Christ. Jonathan North. Servant of Christ. That is the level of transformation that's taking place in James. That's all that he thinks is important. That's all he needs to say. All he wants to say is, this is my status. I am a servant to Jesus. How simple would it be for us all to just go straight there as we look at who we are? And then he addresses the 12 tribes. Basically, he's just saying, hey, there's 12 tribes in Israel. When he says that, he's basically saying, hey, I am addressing the Jewish Christians who've been scattered throughout the Roman Empire due to persecution of their faith. So James has been leading the church in Jerusalem. Now imagine they get scattered, but he's got a pastor's heart, right? So he's reaching out to them. Despite the fact that they're not right there, he's reaching out to them with this letter. He's reaching into where they are. If you've ever moved, you know how difficult it is. You know how difficult it is. And in the circumstances of persecution, it's even more difficult. Think about what they're struggling with right now. Think about what they're tempted to give up on. Think about what they are discouraged about. They're exhausted. Some of them are confused. Some of them are ready to just walk away. And they walk to the mailbox, theoretically, and there's a letter from someone that they trust, because James has a great reputation, someone that knows them, and someone they know, or they know a lot about him. And they open that letter and look at verse 2. Think of all they're going through. And they open that letter and they see, count it all joy. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. What's that got to be doing to the listener at this point? Oh man, how did he know? Like, count it all joy when you meet trials of various kinds. Now, James is doing something very deliberate here. There's a contrast in the language, and he has a purpose for this. So he's saying there's going to be all kinds of trials. A variety of things are going to come your way. I don't even have to explain that to you. You know exactly. You feel it. You're as close. You're like, man, this letter may as well have been written to me, right? You're experiencing various kinds of trials right now. And he says, count it all joy when you experience all kinds of trials. In other words, he's saying you can have one singular response to all the variety of trials that you're encountering. So you could say it like this. He's basically saying, here's one response. All joy, singular. I've got one response. I'm going to consider it all joy. For all trials, plural. All joy for all trials. Let joy be the response to all the world throws at you. And the world is throwing a lot at you right now, right? It starts when you get out of bed. Actually, it probably starts for some of us before we get out of bed, right? The world is like, juggle all this. See what you can do with this. It's a struggle, right? The world wants you discouraged. The world wants you distracted. The world wants you reacting. The world wants you personally, in your heart, mind, and soul, divided. And James is saying, with all that in mind, you've got one response. Count it all joy. Count. How many fingers am I holding up? That's not because you guessed. It's because there was a mental activity. I mean, I know it was simple, but you did count. And that's what he's saying. This word count implies a deliberate activity, okay? It doesn't mean, hey, this is not going to come naturally. You're going to have to stop and choose to have a different perspective on the trials that are coming into your life. It's not just a feeling, it's about a choice of perspective. James isn't suggesting we feel happy about our suffering. That's not what he's saying, but rather that we consciously reframe how we view our trials. We're going to talk a little bit about that more in a minute. Let me just ask you this. What trial are you facing right now that needs reframing? Think about that. What trial are you facing right now that needs to be reframed? Reframing means I'm not just seeing it for what it is. I'm seeing it, and here's where James is going, for the outcome, the full and finished outcome of what will take place because of this. What do you need to reframe? How might God be working through your current struggle right now? That might be hard to think about. You may be down, discouraged. You may be doubting. You may be grumbling about it. When and where, how do you need to reframe that right now? He says, count it all joy, my brothers. Your version, and actually I think it's more accurate, might say brothers and sisters. Count it all joy, my brothers and sisters. The masculine plural in the Greek, quite often referred to brothers and sisters. What is James saying? He's just dropping a hint. You're not alone. Count it all joy, brothers and sisters. This community may be scattered, but we are still brothers and sisters. What happens when you're dealing with trials? What happens when you feel it coming on and you're dealing with it? One of the biggest temptations is to isolate yourself, right? One of the biggest temptations is to say, nobody else is going to understand this. And I've got to carry this on my own. And James is saying, hey, count it all joy, brothers and sisters. You have a community. So here's another question. Who do you need to let in on the struggle you're dealing with right now? May not be your whole life group, may not be a whole group, but who's one person that you can say, hey, I need to share this with you. I don't need to deal with this on my own. Who can you share that with? Count it all joy, my brothers. Verse 3. You know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. Now, he's got a deliberate progression here from verse 3 to verse 4. In verse 3, it's more the process. So he's dealing with the process in verse 3, and then verse 4, we're going to see the fulfillment. Okay, so let's look at the process. You know the testing. Now, that word testing, it's talking about a process of proving that something's genuine. A process of proving that something is genuine, okay? So here, I just wrote, faith untested is faith that you can't trust. It's hard to trust faith that's not been put to the test. I like used cars, and it's my love language on a Facebook ad to say it. When I hear him say, man, I've been to California and back in the last month, I'm like, okay, that car might make it. I'm interested in that car. That car has gone somewhere and come back, and it's still there. Anyway, you understand what I'm saying. I have a little bit more certainty. I can put a little bit more trust in that because I've seen it go through the test. It's been proven. What James is saying is, man, you can put your faith to the test, and it's going to give you something of much greater value, something of certainty. Something you can trust as you walk through the trials of various kinds that are going to come your way. But if you're not willing to put it to the test, then it's just going to be sitting there. And you're like, I don't know if this is ever going to really work for me. Put your faith to work, my friend. Put it to the test. Think about it like this. I love oysters. I feel hypocritical sharing this because I don't give an oyster a chance to make a pearl. Okay, I could eat oysters all day, raw, fried. I love them. Okay, but think about the oyster, think about the pearl. How does it happen? Little grain of sand gets kicked up through the current. I don't know, and finds its way into that oyster. And that oyster's like, "What are you doing to me? Are you kidding me? I was having a good day. I'm smooth. Do you understand? I'm smooth." And now I've got this grain. Do you like sand? You go to the beach and you're like, no, I don't want to shower. I want it in my pants, you know. I just can't wait. I love it. I wish I had it all every day of my life. No. You think the oyster feels any differently? No, he's like, why? But he can't do anything about it. I can't kick it out. So what does he do? Or she. That oyster, or anyway, begins to put layers of film, nacre, over and over and over. Thin layers over and over and over until that irritant becomes less irritating. Until that thing that was an intrusion now really is just a part of the oyster. And then time and layers and layers and layers. Eventually, what happens? Well, you know what happens. There's a pearl. There's a pearl. The irritant creates something precious and beautiful over time. What began as an intrusion becomes a treasure. This is precisely what steadfastness does, okay? The trials that irritate and discomfort us through God's transformative work and our faithful endurance, here's what happens. That very thing produces beauty and something of value in our character. So here's another question. What irritant? What trial? What grain of sand in your life right now might God be using to form something beautiful for you? I can't imagine what all you're going through. And you might think, man, that's easy to say, Jonathan. But I'm just letting the question begin to bear fruit in your life. What might he be doing with that granular, irritating trial, that thing you just like, get this out of my system? No, he's like, no, it's in your system. James is like, put your faith to the test and let that produce something beautiful and significant and of great value to you and the people around you. And then he goes on to say, and let that steadfastness have its full effect. Now we're dealing with the fulfillment. Let steadfastness have its full effect. The full effect. That means stay in it, basically. Yeah, you're going to have to stay in it for you to actually see all that God has in mind and all God has in store. You've got to let it see its full effect. Now, he does something very intentional here. Okay? Look at this. Now, at first glance, you're like, man, whoa, that bar is high. Listen to it. Here's the result of the full effect. He says, that you may be perfect. Ooh. Whoa. Now, we're going to come back to that in a minute. Complete and lacking in nothing. Wow. Perfect, complete, lacking in nothing. I might be in the wrong room here. Well, first of all, the idea of perfection in their culture did not mean flawless. So get that out of your head. They're not talking about being absolutely flawless without any imperfection. The idea here is to be whole in character, okay? Now, think about these three words, okay? To be perfect, to be complete, and lacking nothing. Does that sound redundant? A little bit? Kind of doesn't that sound, okay, if I'm perfect, then I'm complete, I'm lacking nothing, why are you saying it three times? Think about this. You're going to buy a house. You're going to buy a boat, you're going to buy a car. What are you thinking about? You're looking at different angles of this thing to say, hey, is this what we're looking for? Like, okay, think about a house. Does it have all the walls? I mean, seriously, are all the walls there? Well, that's a good start. What else do you need? How many rooms do you need? How many kids do you have? And so the realtor is trying to convince you, hey, this house, and he starts just showing you from different angles how this house might be the right house for you. So from this angle, it looks right. It looks like what you need. From this angle, looks like it's exactly what your family needs. And from this angle, it looks like there's no deficiency. Doesn't mean it's a perfect house. It just means you can go in, you're like, okay, there's not going to be like termites and yeah, everything's working. But that's what James is doing. He's trying to look at completeness from multiple angles just to convey a solid idea. Here's what's going to happen. Here's going to be the fruit of your steadfastness. You're going to be whole in character. Your integrity is going to be sturdy like James's integrity is sturdy so that you can withstand the trials, so you can step into these trials, so you can reframe this and see that God is at work and something beautiful is happening. Does that make sense? Are you tracking with me? So that's the idea. James is trying to do this on purpose. He's building a case just saying, hey, look at all these different angles of how this will make you whole and able to hear the wisdom of this letter, really. All right, but you got to remain under it. You've got to stay in it. The steadfastness, the endurance is key here. Sometimes we short-circuit God by rushing to escape trials rather than embracing what God is doing through them. Sometimes we short-circuit God's work. But this was an easy message to write. I'm writing out of experience. Because by rushing to escape the trials rather than embracing what God is doing through them. I can speak to that personally. But let me just ask you, how might you be escaping right now? What does escape look like for you right now? I could use examples, our phones, the news, media, social media, substances. What right now might you be picking up that is actually shortcutting what God wants to do in your life? What are you derailing on rather than depending on God? What are you grabbing first? What are you reacting with? When the trial happens, I want to get out of this. I don't want it in my life. What do you do to escape? How do you escape? And how might God be saying, let go of that? That's robbing you of the opportunity to depend on me and put this faith to the test and let this faith work in your trials and do a good work in your trials, man. Well, who was James looking at? Who do you think James was looking at every step of the way in his own life? Jesus. Jesus. So how about we do that right now? As we look at Jesus in relationship to our own trials and what we're going through, here's what we know. Our trials, like Christ's suffering, is not the end of the story. Your trials, what you're going through right now, and I can only imagine some of it is just overwhelming you right now. I need to encourage you with this. As we look to what Christ did and through his suffering, what we can know right now is what we're going through right now is not the end of your story. There's more here. Jesus' suffering led to his resurrection and the glory of his Father. What you're dealing with is not the end of your story. Hebrews 12:2. Run with 12:1-2. Run the race with perseverance. Look to Jesus. Fix your eyes on Jesus. And here's what it says: the founder and perfecter of our faith. How are we reframing this? Look at Jesus. This thing that I'm going through, it's tough, it's rough, it's difficult. I don't want to do it. I want to run from it. And what does he say? Run with perseverance. Fix your eyes on Jesus. He is the author and perfecter of our faith. Who, talking about Jesus, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus himself models counting trials as joy by looking to their purpose. By looking to the purpose. He didn't enjoy suffering, but he embraced it because he could see what was going to happen beyond it. His joy wasn't in suffering itself, but in what it would accomplish. Hear that. Not in the suffering itself, but what will this accomplish? For us, it was reconciliation between God and man, the defeat of sin and death, the glorification of his Father, and the guarantee that truly what Johnny said is, this is not the end of the story, and we're going to be okay. We are going to be okay, because what has Christ done? How did he look at the cross? He looked at it with joy, knowing what it would accomplish. Christ's suffering had meaning, my friends. You're not alone. You're with a community. You're with Jesus. Jesus said, I will never leave you or forsake you. You're not in this alone. Your struggles, your trials have a purpose. It's not the end of your story. All right. Let me just wrap up with three ideas here. Three things that I wrote down. There's more, okay? But here are three things that I would call, you could call them temptations, you could call them challenges. As you look at your trials, here's three things I want to personally encourage you with. I'm speaking out of experience, okay? So when I say it, hear it as truth, but hear it as me understanding and learning as I go how to face my trials, how to reframe them. First of all, one of the challenges we all deal with, most of us, some of us specifically, is when something happens, your immediate thought is, I've done something wrong. Now, that's a different message. Sometimes it is because you did, okay? That's a different sermon, actually, in this series. But hear me say this. A lot of you are just constantly beating yourself up, thinking, man, when something goes wrong, it means I did something wrong. It means somebody that is in my family, somebody who did it? What happened to make this happen? I must have done something wrong. I'm expecting something. If things are going right now, something's going to go wrong, and I'm trying to figure out, what did I do? Anybody relate to that? It must have been something I did. Okay? Man, I want to encourage you right now. That gets your mind so off track, so out of focus with Christ and what he's done for you and his complete work for you and what he has in mind for you, because you're constantly wondering, what did I do? And what's the focus on? Who's the focus on? Me. You. So I want to encourage you, rather than looking at it with regret, rather than looking at it with this constant, like, what did I do? How can I make this right? Because if I do it right, guess what? What's your expectation? Then this will go away, right? So it's a trap either way. I encourage you, let your mind, let your focus, let your reframing be shaped by what is to come through the finished and complete work of Jesus, not anything you've done wrong. Okay, again, I'm not saying that we don't put ourselves in jams sometimes. I'm talking specifically to people that when any time a trial happens, I must have done something wrong. All right, let me encourage you again with this. This is going to challenge some of you. Some of you think God owes you something. We're convinced God owes us something. You might not say that out loud. You might not say that particularly, but think about this. I'll say it as practically as I can. You may think, I deserve a certain lifestyle. I'm not talking about whether you're wealthy or not wealthy. Lifestyle, either way. Your level of comfort, what you want to see. What do you want to see your Sunday afternoon to look like? What you want to see Monday through Sunday look like? Your level of comfort, your level of notoriety, does it need to go up? Your level of anonymity, does it need to go down? All kinds of things are in your vision of what you think the world should be. And that vision is fueling expectations that, hey, maybe God owes me something. And that's a trap. Here's why it's a trap. There's no way out of that, okay? Because either God delivers, here's what we're expecting, God's going to deliver, or he's going to use other people to help accomplish the vision I have for my life. And either way, when that doesn't work out, guess who disappointed you? God. Guess who else might have disappointed you? Other people. Why? Because they haven't brought your kingdom to bear. Let your mind, so it's not just reframing your trials. Sometimes we just really need to reframe our entire vision. Set your mind on God's kingdom and what he has for you and his agenda And that will also help you reframe your own trials. And James is a perfect vision of God's kingdom. When we work through these chapters, what we'll see is this is what God had in mind for you all along. And then let me wrap up with this. You might say this, something like this. I don't know the process here. I don't know what's happening, but I bet I understand the product. I think I know what this is going to end up being, right? And here, let me just use examples to explain that. You don't know what the trial is. Why is this happening? But when this is over, I bet blank. And here's me personally. I bet I'll be a better pastor. Or why is this happening? But at least it'll be a good sermon illustration. Why is this happening? I don't know, but this social post is going to get a lot of likes if I put this down. If I do this, if I write this out, I'm going to get a lot of likes. The focus becomes on me again, rather than what God is doing in me. So here it is. What if he just wants you to be more present with your kids? What if he just wants you to be more present with your wife, with your spouse, with your friends? What if he's working through this trial so that you can be more present with your life group, with the people in this church? What if what happens in your life, what if the result of this trial doesn't have an external reward that's very obvious? Not everybody can see it, or it's not as obvious as somebody else's testimony that you hear. And you get discouraged. But here's the truth. What if what you're going through, what if he's just doing a deep work in you for the benefit of making you whole, of making you more like Jesus, a deeper capacity to enjoy him and love others? Would that be okay? I think so. Not easier said than done, right? Reframe your trials. Invite someone into your struggles. Stay in it. Don't rush to escape. Whatever you're going through is not the end of the story. Jesus is at work, my friends. Let him do what he wants to do with this. All joy in all trials. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for your word. Thank you for the work you did in James to produce this letter that encouraged his audience and us today, Lord. I just ask right now, there's so much. I can only imagine what's going on in the lives of the people in this room. So simply, I just ask that where we need to hold on, that you would encourage us to hold on, that you would strengthen us to endure, to not rush away, to not escape, but depend on you. Help us to hold on. Help us to let go of what we need to let go of. When we're escaping, when we reach for something other than you, help us to just help us to identify that right now. What is it? And Lord, give us the strength to let go of that thing and run to you. We love you. Amen.